Welcome to Goals Question Time, where I interview leading executives driving innovation, venturing, and strategic change.
Welcome, everybody, to this aim of our session on digital health innovation and venturing. And we've got Bill Taranto with us. Hi, Bill.
You doing, Andrew?
Very good. Very good to see you again, Bill. We go back so many years from conference and visits to you in Pennsylvania, and
a lot of years.
And I'm really pleased that you and your case that we're going to be speaking about probably today feature really in my book. So I'm really pleased to have you on board, and thanks very much for everybody who's joining us. Brief overview of what we're going to be covering today. We've had a couple of introductions and that from people before we started. If you could stay on mute, unmute when you're asking questions and that later. I'm going to give a brief overview of the context and that today in terms of strategic innovation and venturing. And then Bill is going to be the real meat in this discussion covering the topic of digital health innovation and venturing. We would ask if you could post in the chat as we're going through this, if there's any points of comments, highlights that you think Bill has mentioned, or if you've got questions you'd like to raise, and that when we get to sort of the discussion. In the short presentation I'm giving, there's QR codes and that there. Just if you're watching this sort of online, you can use your phone to look up with the camera, and that'll link you to some of the links that I'm talking about here. So this is part of a series that we've been doing over the last quite number of months. The recent ones that which are on our channel now, we've got Shell Ventures talking about their innovations, Henkel, BMW, Evonik. And one of the most recent ones we did was with GE talking about their exiting of corporate venture capital sort of initiatives, including their health fund and that as well. So that's available on our channel if you'd like to go and watch that. Upcoming sessions, we've got Chris Adelsbach talking about fintech, digital pharmaceutical, AstraZeneca, Cindy Hoots, who's head of digital, and that they're talking about AstraZeneca, could be very relevant for those who are interested in this topic, and early stage investments. The next thing we've got coming up, though, is slightly different to other things that we've done. We're going to be running an 8-part venture capital case study, which is written from the actual documents of a VC investment. But in between each of the 8 parts, we've added content from Aimovar, really, about the challenges of when you're a corporate as opposed to a financial investor, and sometimes how you could be torn on some of the issues. And that we've done this in a number of our sessions face-to-face, where it's really interactive and really engaging in that on the discussion. So I'd encourage you to look at that for... That's next week on the 25th of November. But into the meat of today's discussion, we're really talking about strategic innovation and venturing. And I've outlined in my book and in previous publications where I term purpose to performance, my 5 P's, around what's the strategic objective that's being sought when a corporate does corporate venturing, does incubation, does innovation initiatives. What's the appropriate process? So do they have a fund, similar to what Bill's going to be talking about, or do they run incubation projects, or do they run open innovation initiatives? Who do they partner with? Who are the other corporates? Who are the funds? Who are the entrepreneurs they partner with? And what's the appropriate performance measures? Financial returns, strategic insights, strategic value, increasing sales. But central to it is the people. So how do you engage your board in the purpose? How do you get the right sort of people with the skills to do deals and investments? And Bill, I think, is going to talk very powerfully about him and his team in that sort of context. So really, that's the framework which I outlined in my book, Purpose to Performance. But the other thing I outlined over 3 years ago now was what I termed innovative new value chains. And the reason I've written about this is because it's not just about doing one-off investments in just point solutions or point products. For me, I've seen over the years that new devices throwing off lots of data and new business models and a different relationship with the consumer and the end customer is fundamentally changing in lots of industries. And it's how do we bring together the different technologies, the different startups, and change corporate thinking to create these new value chains. And also organizations need to think about this globally, because innovation just doesn't happen in the East Coast US, West Coast US, China, or other places. It's how do you bring those things together? And I think Bill is a fantastic example of this innovative new value chain, as I describe it, but as Bill describes it, as the ecosystem. So I think we're going to really get some insights from Bill today. Examples of other industries. So I've been doing quite a bit of work over the last couple of years in terms of electric vehicles. So the transition from internal combustion engine to electric vehicles and autonomous vehicles. So a new device, an electric vehicle in this case, throwing off lots of data, and a different relationship with the customer. So instead of buying just a car and it sits on the drive, the whole relationship with the car manufacturer, with the data provider and things like that is very fundamentally different. And what Bill is going to be talking about here is how health diagnostics and the patient and the consumer is going to be changed by this digital sort of environment in the health sort of context. So I say I outlined that in my book. And a previous book that I've covered is called Open Innovation in Action, and very pleased that we've got forwards and testimonials from some real leaders sort of within the field. And as I said, one of Bill's case study that but some of the stuff he's going to talk about today was a significant part of the book, and I'm really pleased that Bill supported in doing that when I published the book. So Bill, that's my teed you up, hopefully for you to sort of support that. So over to you, Bill, if you introduce yourself and take over.
Oh, thank you, Andrew. Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody, wherever you're calling in from, and thank you for participating today. My name is Bill Taranto, and I'm president of the Merck Global Health Innovation Fund, which is Merck's corporate venture firm, and we're focused 100% on digital health. We're probably one of the largest, if not the largest, digital health investor in the world. We deploy well over $100 million of capital a year, and we bring in more than that as an evergreen fund on behalf of Merck. What I'm going to cover today is a little history of the fund, but more importantly, I'll put some slides up in a minute, a bit of what Andrew was talking about. He calls it value chain investing. We call it ecosystem investing, and I'm going to give you the strategy behind how we do it in healthcare, why we do it, and an example of a company that we've built up today through that kind of process, and tell you a little bit about my team, and then certainly then open it up for some questions. But my history real quick is, I've been an investor for over 30 years. I started my career in healthcare banking, and had an opportunity to join Johnson & Johnson, where I was there for 18 years. And then got a call in 2010 to join Merck. Merck had not done venture capital before, and they were very interested in starting a venture capital firm to explore external innovation. They wanted to use off-balance sheet capital to really get an understanding of, you know, back then they used to call it beyond the pill. Now it's called digital health, but it was really trying to understand it, you know, everything beyond the therapeutic that potentially could impact their business as time went on. And the whole idea of the fund was then to give them optionality around M&A, or at least put assets out in the world that they could utilize from a commercial arrangement, and learn and grow their business as needed. And that's sort of the basic, you know, brief history of the firm. So let me pull up some slides for you. Let me share my screen here. Yeah, let me put that in presentation mode. Okay, so a little bit of history on the fund. I'll just kind of go to the right side. As I said before, we're a $500 million evergreen fund. We've done well over 50 investments. We've had 21 exits either through private sale or IPO. And we've evergreened the fund on multiple occasions. We've brought Merck back, you know, well over $1 billion since we started the fund. We're a growth investor. We mostly focus on Series C or later. We'll do an A and B round occasionally if it fits the ecosystem that we're trying to build, but we certainly do not do any startup or seed capital. That's out of the remit of the fund. We're actually an independent LLC that operates separately from Merck. I'm a Merck employee though, and all the staff are Merck employees, but we structure ourselves to be very independent from Merck to mimic a private firm. And what I mean by that is a couple different things. One, we have all of our capital up front. I don't have to tin cup it anywhere within the organization to get capital. All the investment thesis and decision making is created by the team, all the strategy. We do have a board that's consistent of Merck leadership, and they're just a yes-no function. Well, they'll say yes or no to an investment. If they say yes, we're going to go ahead and take that investment and manage it to some disposition, which is either we keep investing, we sell it, or perhaps it wasn't the best investment and we had to shut that investment down. But we manage that investment fully as ourselves. And what it does is it allows us to really be a good partner. And what I mean by that is that a lot of corporates will tell you that they're strategic, and it's almost impossible to be just strategic. We're actually financial first, strategic second. And the reason is that, one, we obviously have to be evergreen. Also, I've never met a corporate CFO that said it was okay to lose money. You actually have to make money. And the way you actually do that is you have to build good companies. And if you build really good companies within the ecosystem that you're investing, then the strategic benefit comes. But if you don't actually build a good investment and a good company, the relationship you actually have won't work out with that particular portfolio company, because ultimately the company's going to fail. And so we actually like to be a financial investor first and a strategic investor second. What I'd like to cover next is a little bit about our strategy, which is kind of based on this slide. Then I'll get into the other piece of it, which is how we execute. So we have two different types. We operate on what we call a strategy-focused investment thesis. And it's strategy around two functions. It's strategy around the actual investment that we're doing, the thesis behind it, and there's a strategy around how we actually execute once we make an investment. And the strategy around our investment thesis is twofold. It's based on two fundamental ideas. One is that we believe data is the currency we're going to use to transact in the future healthcare market. What we mean by that is we want all of our companies to be data companies, whether they're collecting data, analyzing data, throwing off data, managing data, that they have a fundamental core around data. And that's a key component for us, because ultimately in healthcare, it's about the clinical validation of the data in which a company is collecting. In order to get the reimbursement you're looking for, in order to get the scale you're looking for, it's really about the clinical management and clinical component of what you're focused on. It's not the medical data. And what I mean the difference between the two is, if you wear a Fitbit, right, and you go out and you run 5 miles and it tells me that you ran 5 miles, that's just medical data. What it doesn't tell me is the clinical component. Did you come back home and eat 5 donuts, or did you continue to, exercise? It doesn't really tell me much about the clinical side of your healthcare. And we're interested in the clinical component of healthcare, because that's really what drives outcomes. And we're an outcome-based company, and we believe healthcare is based on outcomes. So the first premise is that data is the currency. Got to be a data company. The second is something that Andrew alluded to. Point solutions actually don't work in healthcare. They're difficult to scale, and you have to really work in an integrated healthcare environment, or create an integrated solution that serves a broad swath of the healthcare environment and provides almost a one-stop shop. And we believe that's probably the most important thing. And if we can't connect a company to another company within an ecosystem that we're building, we won't actually do the investment. We have to be able to connect those companies together. What I'll cover next in a moment is how we actually execute. And our execution strategy is something that we call ecosystem investing. But first, I'll just kind of tell you what we like to look at and what we like to invest in. We're very interested in the front end of the care, and that's that therapy planning piece that you see on the top of the slide. It's all about how you think about the patient. It's how do you get the right patient, right place, right time sort of concept. So this could be diagnostics. This is better patient identification, better patient stratification. And then we're very interested in the back end of care, which is the whole idea of care management. How do you do care coordination? How do you manage that patient's journey from once they're either pre-diagnosed, through diagnosis, through treatment, through post-treatment? And we want to be there with that patient, with all the things that we can do for that patient. But everything that we actually do is actually supported by technology. Technology is an enabler in healthcare, but we believe in the whole infrastructure of technology supporting healthcare. And those are things like data security, privacy, and storage, data analytics and informatics, and data aggregation and harmonization for that kind of data. So we want to make sure that we're actually investing in the whole data infrastructure to support what we're doing on the above layer, which is this whole idea of therapy planning and care management. And then we also focus on the e-clinical sort of trial space as well in order to better support that patient identification, patient stratification. The fund is always evolving. One of the newest areas that it's not represented on this slide that we're investing in is we were asked last year to start focusing on supply chain for Merck. And we recently did our first two investments in the supply chain space. We did an investment in a cold storage company that has a little box, about 12 by 12, that can transport vaccines in a cold storage capacity. And if you're following what's happening with the two potential new drugs coming out to treat COVID-19, you know, they have to be kept at a very cold temperature. Well, how do you distribute those in a way around rural areas or hospitals or to large, you know, communities in a cold storage fashion? So this company does that. The other company we invested in is a drone company. We actually believe you can deliver, things like vaccines and medicines via drone, you know, either to the big hospital systems or again out into rural areas or large populations that don't necessarily have access. So those are kind of some of the ways we're actually thinking of how digital, you know, health works within the supply chain. And so that's a new area for us. Our main focus, though, is oncology. Merck did a strategic pivot in 2016 or so to move from a healthcare company, or I would say a broad primary care company, to an oncology company. We have the largest cancer drug in the world called Keytruda. And so we're heavily focused on anything in oncology. I would say that's our primary focus as it relates to any therapeutic area. But it doesn't have to actually be very specific to Keytruda in and of itself. It's just thinking about oncology and oncology patients and how we better serve those type of patients. So what I'd like to actually talk now about is our ecosystem investment strategy. And this gets to where Andrew outlined in his book and kind of follows his five P's. He calls it value chain investing, but we call it ecosystem investing. And how it works is this. So we actually don't start with a company. We actually start with a use case. And a use case in the healthcare lingo is just a problem. What is the problem you are trying to solve within healthcare? And what we do is once we've identified that problem and we make sure that that problem is something that's a critical need within healthcare, we actually go out and try to find a company that can solve maybe 50 or 60% of that problem. Remember, all the companies in healthcare ultimately are just a point solution, and that point solution only solves maybe half of the problem or, you know, 50 or 60% of that problem. And what we do is if we can find that particular company, we call it an anchor tenant, and we'll invest in that anchor tenant. And then what we do is we invest around it, much like an anchor tenant in a mall. We'll invest around it to fill in gaps that we identify. Because again, if you're only solving 50 or 60% of the problem, you got to fill in those gaps by investing in other companies. What we do is, and we make it a mandate, is that all the companies that we invest in, we make sure that they actually work together. And they can work together in a number of different ways. They can work together just in, you know, as formal as a joint venture. It could be working together in swapping technology, sharing a platform, or they can work together in commercial agreements. But the whole idea is to link these companies together and bring that larger integrated solution to the market and potentially create scale. One of the things we actually do, if we actually think we can combine some of the companies, we actually have a private equity firm called the Global Health Innovation Private Equity Firm that we will use to deploy more capital and actually start bringing companies together under one umbrella. And the whole idea then is to bring, you know, the scale that you're looking for. So the first piece is connect your companies in your portfolio and get them to be working together. And then think about rolling them up into a single company so you can get the scale and maturity and the size that you're looking for. One of the biggest problems in healthcare is scale. Most companies start locally and regionally. And even within the United States, they'll work with a local health plan. Well, how do you get it move? You know, let's say they're working with Partners Healthcare in Boston. Well, how do you get that across the U.S.? You know, how do you get the competition to accept it? Well, you have to build scale and you have to build bigger companies in order to execute against this. I'll give you a real-time example of how we've actually done ecosystem investing. In 2011, we had identified a problem in healthcare, which is the whole problem of treating AFib, which can lead to stroke. So a patient, you know, has a poor rhythm within their heart, and that could lead to a stroke or any other cardiac event. And we wanted to prevent AFib happening or manage AFib once the patient has it. We identified an anchor tenant in a company called Preventice. And Preventice was the whole front end of the solution. Excuse me. So they had the software. they had the algorithms and they had the device. And the device is just a little patch that goes on your chest. It hooks right between your breastbone. Instead of wearing things like a Holter monitor, this is a 3-in-1 device that can do all sorts of different types of cardiac measurements. But what we realized after we did that investment, we continued to grow the company, but we were actually missing the whole back end of the solution. That was the biggest gap that we were missing. We didn't have a call center. We didn't have a way to communicate with the cardiologist. We didn't have any electrophysiologists on staff to read the loops that are happening within the reading of the measurements. We didn't have an ability to ship and clean the devices. So we identified a company out in Texas called eCardio. And eCardio had the entire back end. And what we did in 2015 is we acquired both Preventus and eCardio and merged them into a single company called Preventus Solutions. Once we had done that, we decided to invite in a partner. We realized as Merck, we weren't really a cardiology company and we needed to bring in some expertise. So we actually brought in Boston Scientific as our partner and we sold them 25% of the company. And we actually paid Merck back all the money we originally invested to acquire both companies. Since 2015, we identified a few more gaps. We identified that we needed additional algorithms. So we acquired another algorithm company. We identified that we were missing the back end of care. We didn't have a care coordination company, so we acquired a cardiac coordination company, and we made a few small other investments to help stabilize our platform and grow the company. Today, since 2011, the company today is the largest privately held monitoring company. We have over $160 million in revenue. We have $17 million in EBITDA and $5 million in cash flow. And we're trying to decide what we want to do today. Do we IPO the company? Do we continue to build it or do we privately sell it? The company today is worth over $2 billion. And we built that from a single $2 million investment in 2011. So we have scale. We brought lots of companies together and we're a single integrated solution that we're delivering cardiac measurement of AFib to the market, which specifically is cardiologists. So that's just an example of how we think about ecosystem investing. Build from a single company as an anchor tenant, invest around it, and then scale to bring them all together into a single type of company. One of the key things about, you know, corporate venturing, I'll say, is that you actually have to put a good team together. One of the odd things I see corporates do sometimes is that they'll hire people within the business that maybe don't have venture capital experience. And it's really key to have venture capital experience. For example, business development, when you're doing M&A, that's not really venture capital. My entire team today are all experts in all the areas that we practice. They all have tremendous venture capital experience. They can do private equity and they can do M&A. Because one of the things we actually do for Merck is if a Merck identifies one of our portfolio companies as something they'd like to acquire, we actually do that acquisition for them. But we don't do M&A on other types of areas of Merck. It's just really around our portfolio and venture capital. But this is a very experienced team, all with years and years of experience. In fact, a number of them came from me, from J&J. And they all do have areas of expertise, so they can all invest in, you know, broad areas. But Joel Volpe on the far right, he specializes in our IT and supply chain. Premtim Kozit is our newest member, but he focuses on something we call Next Horizon. So we have about $50 million within our fund that's focused on things that are 5 years out that we think might have an application in healthcare, but we don't know yet. So that could be things like quantum computing. It could be biome. You know, just areas that we say, yeah, I think it might have an impact, but I have no clue if it's going to have an impact. And we deploy very little amounts of money, but it gives us a seat at the table and a look at what might happen in the future. Dave Stevenson manages our fund. He's our chief operating officer, our chief financial officer. David Rubin handles all of our clinical investments. So these are things that could be like diagnostics, but anything that has a pure clinical component to it, that especially relates to our Merck research labs. Joel Crickson handles all of our human health sort of investments. So things that I would say more consumer-based oriented or more publicly facing oriented companies. He also manages our strategic alliance functions. So one of the things that we do is once we do an investment, we do like Merck to work with our companies. And we do that through our alliance management function where we manage the relationship between the portfolio company and Merck. And once Merck signs a commercial agreement, we help manage that through our alliance management function. And that's what Arash Hanafi does. And of course, myself, I run the overall fund. But the key is it's a very experienced team that knows how to do all the things we like to do and knows healthcare extremely well. And this is just a quick glimpse at our portfolio, and we've kind of just broken it into a number of different categories. You know, one section is improving diagnosis and identification of care gaps. A lot of these types of companies are clinical companies. The middle section is more improving and coordinating and closing those care gaps. So more about care coordination. Livongo was probably, if you follow digital health, was just the largest digital health exit ever. They IPO'd last year, $2.8 billion, and this year just were sold to Teladoc for $18 billion. So you can see that, you know, digital health is really starting to take off. And then the last side is more of our, I would call it our platforms enable evidence. So this is our health IT sort of stack, where we look at, you know, data security, privacy, and storage, data aggregation, integration, harmonization, analytics, and informatics. And all these companies actually work together. You'd be surprised this connection that we have, where most of these companies work across all three areas, and we have multiple relationships between the companies. And one of the areas that we're looking to build a broader ecosystem, start rolling up, is in the oncology side, is can we bring, you know, a number of oncology companies together that do everything from care coordination, management of data, and help the physician better identify and stratify patients that need a certain type of oncology treatment. So that's one of the main areas that we're looking at today. So that's, you know, my basic slide talk. I'll exit out of this. Let me unshare and get back to the main screen. And, you know, happy to answer any kind of questions that you have about what we do. You know, and one of the interesting things I'll say, you know, and Andrew has been a big proponent of this sort of, you know, value chain or ecosystem investing. One of the things I'm really proud about, too, is a lot of corporates contact me from different areas of the world, you know, not even just healthcare, but, you know, everything from manufacturing to technology, and a lot of companies are starting to employ this sort of ecosystem investing because it works really in any industry, because, you know, they have scale problems too. Not everything is like the tech industry where, you know, a Google scales, you know, globally overnight. Most industries, it doesn't quite work that way, and you have to think about all the touch points within your industry, all the different type of players, and then how do you bring them together and bring that solution that really is integrated for all those types of players? And that's really what the ecosystem and value-based sort of or value chain approach is all about. So I'll stop there. And
excellent.
Andrew, excellent, happy to Bill. Answer any kind of questions that have popped in.
Now, Bill, that was excellent. Thanks very much. Really appreciate that. And just to reemphasize a couple of points that you've made, I think, in the talk there, that yes, this is applicable to lots of other industries, like, you know, the electric vehicle space that I sort of gave an example about. Financial services, now it's not just about having a bank account, it's about micropayments, it's about integrating it with sort of commerce. We're seeing things in the consumer space. So this is impacting all sorts of areas, different technologies clashing together with big data, with artificial intelligence, with the change in actions of the consumer. These ecosystems that you talk about, I think, is so powerful. And I think, I don't get your view on this, and, you know, you and I've been around in this for years now, and we see so many corporates coming into venturing. And my sort of stereotype is, you know, if they can survive for a couple of years, then great, they've done a few deals. But then when they get to about year four or year five, they think, well, what's this really about? Because are we really being strategic? And then I think that's when they should think about this. Have you got a view about that, about how organizations would transition their thinking?
Yeah, I think the main thing that I see is, and it's kind of sort of how we invest. You know, we have a strategy-driven investment approach. And one of the things I think the corporates make a mistake is they haven't thought through why they're getting into corporate venture. Why, you know, why are they doing it? And what is the strategy behind doing it? And what is the strategy in which they're going, you know, where are you going to invest? Are you early stage startup? Are you Series A and B? Or are you, like me, a growth investor? You know, a lot of these things have to be thought through long before you actually make your first investment, because that sets the foundation for when you are 3 to 4 years out, you've established what you're going to be and how you're going to act. And it's all based on a strategy. So I always advise corporates that, you know, contact me, is have a strategy around your investment thesis, have a strategy around how you're executing, have a strategy around where you're going to invest and why you're investing there, and then have a strategy ultimately around what is it you're trying to accomplish. Merck's viewpoint is a lot different. What we were trying to accomplish is twofold. One is we want assets to be existing in the world that Merck has the ability to partner with. What it does then for Merck and the healthcare community is that it makes them better at what they do. And then the secret sauce is what Merck does inside. It's not so much the company they're working with, it's how they use the application of the company inside of Merck. The second piece for us is then to give Merck that optionality. If there's anything that they really want proprietary, they have the option to acquire it. They're a bidder like anybody else, but they do have that option. So it's twofold, the way we think about it. Taking the approach of just like a shotgun of just making hundreds of investments and hoping one sticks really isn't a strategy. And then ultimately what ends up happening is, you actually begin to lose a lot of money, in which the corporate begins to say, well, this really wasn't financially successful and it wasn't actually strategically successful. So I personally think it's all based on having a strategy-driven approach first, establishing a foundation, and that allows you to have success up front. And I think you also have to have quick wins. You've been given a lot of money, and you have to be good stewards of the money. And that gets back to being financial first and strategic second. I know they tell you you're strategic, but you really have to make a smart financial investment in order to look good to your corporate that says, no, I can actually do both. I can actually make a smart financial investment, builds a very good company that's strategic to you, and I can exit that company and you can have access to that cash or help me reinvest that cash again, which is what I do, into another company.
Yeah, no, that's great. I got one more point to make, then we've got a few questions and that from the audience, which you'll come to. So just again, re-emphasizing this point, which I think you make really well, about you doing it for financial returns in a strategic area, because certainly what I see with the corporates when I sit down with them, so what's the purpose? Why are you trying to do this? And they say, well, we want to be strategic. And then I say to them, well, what does that mean? And they say, well, our business units will decide where we're going to invest. And I said, well, no, surely that's tactical, because the business units can be driven by their current business model and the current technologies they know. To be strategic, as you illustrated as an example, you need to be thinking 5 years out. And how is quantum computing really going to impact? Or how are these different types of diagnostics and these going to work in sort of different ways? So I think a lot of corporates often, when they say they're strategic, I think they actually mean they're tactical. And I think the way you put it there, that you don't stay strategic for long if you don't make a financial return.
Right.
Can you write a check for an investment and can you get a bigger check back? Doesn't have to be that sophisticated about IRRs and sort of stuff like that. It's can you write a check and can you get a bigger one back? And I think you've illustrated that with your, with the likes of the example you gave with Preventice. And now you've got an entity which you've got some cash back from Boston Scientific, and you've got a valuation and entity which is fantastic.
Yeah.
And as you've described it, it is a strategic health change in how you built that ecosystem around Preventice. So. Those are great points. So let's open it up to questions.
Bill,
so it's been really insightful.
Thank you.
As always, great pleasure to see you. If I was here, I'd give you a big man hug. So I'm sorry I'm not with you and that here, as we are normally in California or Pennsylvania or even over in Ireland. So really appreciate your time again. Thanks so much for your great insights. And all the best to you and your team and your family and that over there in these times. And hope to see the rest of the participants in the call today on some of our future programs. And feel free to reach out to me or even to Bill, and that we can put you in touch if you've got particular areas. So thank you all very much.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you for participating. And thank you, Andrew. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
Do subscribe for future podcasts. And if you found this of value, please give us a 5-star rating. Thank you.